Montanans speak out after President Obama announces an ambitious coal reduction plan. Good evening, I'm Corin Cates-Carney.
And I'm Conrad Scheid, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also hear from new UM men's basketball head coach Travis DeCure.
And Corrections Officer Landy Holloway talks about the challenges facing former prisoners as they re-enter society. The Obama administration unveiled its plan today amid cutting carbon dioxide emissions from power plants by nearly a third by 2030, but it delays the deadline for some states to begin complying until long after President Barack Obama leaves office. The 645-page plan, expected to be finalized next year, is a centerpiece of Obama's effort to deal with climate change and seeks to give the United States more leverage to prod other countries to act when negotiations on new international treaty resume next year. Under the plan, carbon emissions are to be reduced 30% from 2005 levels in what would amount to one of the most significant U.S. actions on global warming. Count on Coal Montana spokesman Chuck Deneau describes the plan as bad news for Montana and the entire nation. Count on Coal is a coalition of business, industry, and labor groups dedicated to the increased production of Montana coal. Deneau says the ultimate effect of this plan will only result in higher electricity prices, higher prices for goods and services that require electricity input, and the elimination of many Montana jobs.
Well, Montana is a major coal-producing state, and we've really got the potential to be a very big coal-producing state if we could get to the markets where the demand is. But certainly anybody that's in the energy sector today should be concerned about the future. We have a lot of mining jobs, transportation jobs, electricity generators who are all could be affected by this rule.
University of Montana Regents Professor of Ecology and Nobel Prize co-recipient Steve Running says today's announcement is, in his own words, finally the next big step Americans needed to take for a number of years, close quote. He says the international community is closely observing the moves America will take on this issue. Running adds the plan could have sweeping practical impacts.
This is going after the single biggest emission point we have, which is burning coal for electric power. That's by far the biggest single source. We've known that for years. If we're going to make a difference, this is the place to start. And the important thing is it's a carbon emission where we have choices. We have alternatives. Some things we don't have good alternatives, but this is one we do.
Count on Coal Montanans Chuck Deneau says the proposal will certainly be dogged by litigation.
There's surely going to be a lot of political debate about it, and I think that puts the industry in a good position because when people see what the effect of this rule would be on jobs, on our economy, on our ability to compete worldwide, then I think a significant amount of opposition will grow to this rule.
Steve Running doesn't disagree that this plan could be tied up in litigation for years.
But on both sides, because I'm aware of a couple of legal cases getting ready to sue the EPA if they don't do this. And so everybody's lawyering up. This is the way America seems to work, unfortunately. And so I'm sure the coal supporters are getting their lawyers ready, but don't think there aren't lawyers in the environmental movement that will be going after this if in any way the EPA starts to back down.
The EPA projected that carrying out the plan will cost up to $8.8 billion annually in 2030, but the annual cost will depend heavily on how states choose to reach their targets.
Senator John Walsh wrote to the Montana Public Service Commission today urging approval of the sale of Montana's hydroelectric dams from PPL Montana to Northwestern Energy. In 2013, Northwestern Energy submitted an application to the Montana Public Service Commission, a five-person board responsible for regulating Montana's energy sector, to purchase the dams owned by PPL. Walsh said the dams would offer a long-term, clean, carbon-free, and reliable generation asset for Montana consumers. Quote, selling the dams to Northwestern would return the hydroelectric plants to the hands of a Montana-controlled company and sustain the high-quality union jobs in the region.
The University of Montana's new men's head basketball coach was formally introduced today. Travis DeCure replaced Wayne Tinkle, who left his alma mater last year for Oregon State. UM Athletic Director Kent Haslam hired DeCure this past Saturday. DeCure is a former standout point guard for the Grizzlies, who has completed his sixth season on the University of California's coaching staff and his second as the Golden Bears' associate head coach. He spent five seasons as the assistant coach for Grizzlies head coach Blaine Taylor at Old Dominion. Haslam today said it was an intense 14-day search process.
Travis really stood out right from the get-go, and so I felt like from my strategy, from my own way of doing this, focusing on Travis first, it might have been a kind of a naive strategy for an athletic director, but I felt like that's what I needed to do was get to Travis, especially once I got face-to-face with him, and hear his vision, and then when that was done, I knew, okay, this is where we need to go. So I put all my focus into Travis.
Coach DeCure says new opportunities like this are always exciting, but he wasn't sure what he was getting into until he got back to Missoula. He says he's felt nothing but goodwill since landing here. He adds he also understands that there are big expectations for him and his team.
I know I've got big shoes to fill. Larry got the program back to the NC2A tournament with a victory. One of two guys ever to win a NC2A tournament game at Missoula. And then Wayne, you know, three championships in 4 years. So I'm fortunate to be here. I understand I've got big shoes to fill. I'm excited. I look forward to it.
DeCure graduated from UM in 1994 with a degree in business marketing.
A single-engine airplane crashed in the northern part of Yellowstone National Park, seriously injuring the 54-year-old pilot. Gardner resident Bill Hill tells the Livingston Enterprise he heard a plane's engine struggling at about 8:30 this morning and saw the small plane headed toward the ground at a strange angle. Hill says he was first on the scene and saw pilot Mark Narden of Prey crawl out of the wreckage. He says Narden had his wits about him, complained about pain in his ribs, and appeared to have a broken leg. Hill says he stayed with Narden until emergency responders arrived. Yellowstone spokesman Al Nash said the pilot was taken to the hospital in Bozeman.
A 47-year-old man who was bear hunting in southwestern Montana was attacked by a bear over the weekend. The Beaverhead County Sheriff's Office says the Stevensville man and his father were hunting in a Centennial Valley when he was attacked by a bear yesterday afternoon. It is not known if he was attacked by a black bear or a grizzly. Sheriff Jay Hansen says the man was stabilized at a hospital in Dillon before being flown to Seattle Hospital for treatment of serious injuries. The man's name and information on his condition were not immediately released. Fish, Wildlife, and Parks wardens are investigating.
U.S. Senator John Walsh faces his first test in keeping the seat he was appointed to 4 months ago when Max Baucus resigned to become ambassador to China. Walsh is looking to stave off challenges from former Lieutenant Governor John Bollinger and Rancher Dirk Adams in tomorrow's Democratic primary election. The winner will face the Republican nominee, which is widely expected to be U.S. Representative Steve Daines. Daines is up against State Representative Champ Edmonds of Missoula and political newcomer Susan Cundiff. Montanans voting tomorrow also will select party nominees for Daines' U.S. House seat and 125 state legislative seats. There's also 11 nonpartisan judicial races and two public service commission positions at stake.
The reintegration of previously incarcerated people into our communities presents both opportunities and challenges for everyone involved. A public meeting will be held in Missoula tomorrow evening to discuss various aspects of this issue. A local task force is working to make Missoula a more welcoming community for ex-prisoners while simultaneously ensuring their accountability. Missoula-based Department of Corrections, Probation, and Parole Officer Landy Holloway says many people leave prison with no job, no money, and quite possibly many burned bridges behind them. That, coupled with chemical dependency and or mental health issues, creates a person who is struggling for stability and viable options.
43% of Montana prisoners at this point recidivate and go back to prison. And what our goal is to have an impact on what happens in the community to reduce that number for recidivism in Missoula community and across the state in Montana.
Holloway says steady jobs, adequate housing, mentorship, and access to mental health issues and substance abuse counseling all contribute to transforming the previously incarcerated into productive citizens.
And part of our community meeting is for people to join our efforts to strengthen and develop those opportunities. We're focusing on trying to develop apprenticeship programs and work with the employment community. We're working in collaboration with Opportunity Resources Incorporated, the Human Resource Council, the Montana Job Service, and the labor unions, of trying to develop those opportunities and increase employment. Employment right now is an all-time low for Missoula. However, we need to get previously incarcerated individuals to a higher level with employment. Just these entry-wage jobs is not sustainable employment.
Holloway stresses that nobody wants to pressure employers to hire former prisoners who don't fit their needs.
There is a significant labor pool that's available who have been incarcerated. There's a willingness and a desire to work, and just maybe changing that first look at that application and not saying if they have a felony conviction to get rid of them, but to take a deeper, closer look. Is this person, could they do the job? If we give a chance on them, maybe they'll be a dedicated employee for quite some time.
She says many of the formerly incarcerated start their new lives with the attitude that, quote, I've served my time, changed my ways, and I want to move forward, unquote. Tomorrow's community meeting by Partners for Reintegration starts at 6:30. It'll be held at Missoula's St. Paul's Lutheran Church at 202 Brook Street. Department of Corrections Director Mike Batista will be one of the featured speakers.
The story of Ray Beasley and his fellow smoke jumpers went untold for more than 50 years. Now they've been invited to Washington, D.C. and finally recognized for their secret CIA missions over Tibet in the 1950s and 60s. Beasley and his friends were recruited by the agency in 1959 to assist in parachuting Tibetan resistance fighters and their supplies into the Chinese-occupied country. Beasley worked for the CIA for 3 years before quitting to start a family. He'd become disillusioned with the organization, particularly over its treatment of its veterans. When he came home, he went back to work for the U.S. Forest Service, running a textile lab in Missoula. There, he designed shake-and-bake bags, which are emergency shelters used by firefighters. He also sewed the prototypes for fire suppression uniforms and designed the specifications for the FS-10 parachute system. He said his standout memories from his 40 missions, which took him not only to Tibet, but also Laos and the Bay of Pigs, are about the companionship. His only regret was that more of his buddies weren't alive to finally receive some of the recognition due to them.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms, with lows in the 40s. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the 70s. In central Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies in the evening, then becoming partly cloudy. Scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then isolated showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Lows 45 to 50. Tomorrow, look for cloudy skies again. Chance of showers and thunderstorms. Highs 70 to 75. And in southwest Montana tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with scattered showers and thunderstorms in the evening, then isolated showers and thunderstorms after midnight. Lows 40 to 45. Tomorrow, mostly cloudy again, showers and thunderstorms likely, high 65 to 75. And now for the editorial comments of Tom Powers.
EPA released today its anxiously awaited proposals for reducing the carbon emissions from our existing fleet of fossil-fueled electric generators. For several months, both environmental and business interests have been trying to mount political pressure on EPA to tighten or relax the regulations it was crafting. These groups were also gearing up for the longer future political and legal battles to defend or block these regulations. The United States Chamber of Commerce, for instance, commissioned a study intended to show that regulating the carbon emissions from power plants would cripple the American economy, throwing hundreds of thousands out of work. The Natural Resources Defense Council, one of the more influential American environmental groups, also published reports both proposing ways to cut the cost of dramatically reducing carbon pollution and demonstrating just how low those costs could be. What is one to make of this conflicting babble long before the actual carbon reduction regulations were published for public comment, not to mention the uproar of even more contentious debate that is sure to follow? There are several things to keep in mind in evaluating some of the more hysterical claims of economic calamity that have already been made. First, EPA is not proposing to mandate how fossil-fueled electric generators meet the new carbon emission reductions. EPA proposes to turn that over to the business and technological ingenuity of the American people. Electric generators will be able to get credit for reducing carbon emissions if they arrange a reduction in carbon emissions, not just at their own generators, but also anywhere else in the American economy. The electric utility can focus on the opportunities throughout the economy to reduce carbon emissions and pick the cheapest, lowest-hanging fruit. investments in improving the efficiency with which electricity is used by households and businesses funded by electric utilities would be one possibility. Improving the energy efficiency of the electric utility's own generation, transmission, and distribution system would count. Investing in additional renewable generation, wind or solar, would count. Shifting generation among the electric generators the utility owns so that natural gas-fueled generators operated more hours of the year while reducing the hours of operation of the coal-fueled generators would also count. Retiring older, less efficient, and dirtier coal-fired generators and replacing them with natural gas-fueled generators would count. The alternative business responses available to the affected electric generators are incredibly varied and limited only by the creativity of our business community. This opportunity to innovate in meeting the new carbon emission standards is crucially important in projecting what costs may be or how economically disruptive new standards are likely to be. The doom and gloom folks assume passive responses by electric generators whose only choice is assumed to be adding very costly carbon capture and sequestration technology. That is not how American businesses have responded to new environmental standards in the past, and it is not how they will respond now either. Second, it's important to keep in mind that the reference point for measuring carbon emission reductions is 2005, which was the peak year for carbon emissions in the United States. Since then, our carbon emissions have declined by a sixth. That represents having attained half of the proposed target for 2030, if we can hang on to those past reductions. It also means that utilities who have been investing in energy efficiency and renewable generation since 2005 are well on their way to meeting their carbon reduction targets. Third, be wary of apparently large numbers. The U.S. Chamber of Commerce, for instance, has projected that meeting these carbon emission limits will cost American households $586 billion in lost disposable income. The chamber describes this in terms of a sustained decline in real wages and a sustained lower standard of living. But in fact, the chamber is projecting rising real wages and a rising standard of living, just one that does not rise as fast as the chamber thinks it otherwise would. In addition, this lost disposable income is a cumulative value over 17 years and across all American households. The actual average loss in disposable income would be about $200 per household per year. $200 is a bit smaller than $586 billion and unlikely to cause much panic. Similarly, the U.S. Chamber expects the economy to grow by 2.5% per year. For our $17 trillion economy, that is an annual expansion of about $375 billion each year. The chamber projects that the new carbon emissions controls could cost about $50 billion per year in GDP. That is about 0.3% of our GDP. The annual growth rate, according to the chamber, would continue on at about 2.2% per year. What the chamber is actually projecting is not a decline in the economy, just a slightly slower rate of growth. Of course, the critics who emphasize the cost of carbon control implicitly or explicitly are assuming that the emissions from fossil-fueled electric generators are benign and that climate instability imposes no cost on us and never will. For that reason, any cost associated with carbon control is seen as a pure waste. For those areas already struggling with the effects of climate change, whether it be increasingly severe hurricanes and tornadoes, or extensive drought and heat waves, or bigger wildfires during a longer fire season, or rising sea levels, those power plant emissions are not benign and costless. It is time to take the scientific evidence and the experience we have and act to protect ourselves and the rest of the planet. That is the only way to begin to put an international coalition together that can make a difference.
Tom Power is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. The views expressed don't necessarily represent those of the station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edwin O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.